Thanks, Al. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you about the Wilson Estate. It is a fascinating subject. It starts with a man that it was a respected citizen and a friend of nature. Those words are inscribed under the bust of Mr. Wilson, which is located down by the locks. Leroy Percival Wilson was an inventor. He was a businessman, and he was devoutly committed to this community. He established a bequest which at the time amounted to slightly more than $3 million at the time. He was the sole shareholder of Wilson & Wilson Limited. At that point, they ran a daily newspaper called the Daily Post, and they also ran another business called Lindsay Church Envelope. The fascinating thing about Lindsay Church Envelope is well into the late 80s, the Church Envelope operated almost 90% of the North American market for church envelopes. That has come and gone with the development of others, but it was an entirely lucrative business. His newspaper, Wilson, the Daily Post, started with handset type, and he had owned several patents of the equipment that he developed. What's fascinating about what he did is that it trickled down to members of the community, and I'm going to give you a little bit of history that I think is very important. The will itself doesn't name a beneficiary, and I brought it. Every time I look at it, I find something new. It's a beneficial purpose, and he had a vision to do several set things. He wanted to create a park in memory of his wife, Rivera, who passed away before him. He wanted to create docking facilities along the Scugog River that would permit boat traffic to come into Lindsay. He had a vision that they would be able to go up the Scugog into Sturgeon Lake and arrive at a little island, which he also owned, called Grape Island. Grape Island's still there. The estate still owns it. Unfortunately, the loons and more devastating, the Commodores have taken over and destroyed it. But it's still there. So in this will, he names three executors. One is the individual that is totally responsible for me putting my feet in Lindsay. That's Jamie McQuarrie. At the time, I got a call from some fellow that I knew not of. I was working at a law firm in downtown Toronto back then called Borden Elliott. There were 175 lawyers, and I didn't see where my name was ever going to show up on that letterhead. So I had made a plan with my wife, Lori, and at that point, our only child, Alex, that we were going to take a year off and do some hiking in Australia. She reminded me I had a $75,000 student loan, and she wasn't too comfortable with me taking a year off work and suggested to me that probably I wasn't tired of being a lawyer, just I was probably not fit for being a lawyer or capable of rolling back my personal life to stay in Toronto. As I said, the next thing that happened is I got a call. And it's funny how things connect, because Jamie McQuarrie had a little hobby farm out near Bethany. And unfortunately, there was a sand and gravel pit that wanted to open up around the corner. So Jamie retained one of the best municipal lawyers in the province to deal with that, who happened to be one of my senior partners at Borden Elliott. In those discussions, Gord Petch told Jamie that I did not want to stay in Toronto, that I was interested in opening a litigation practice. Jamie thought, well, we need a litigation lawyer at our firm. And at that point, there were five lawyers at a firm in Lindsay, which is a pretty small community. And I got a call, and on answering it, Jamie said, listen, Scott, your name's been given to me. Would you come on up to Lindsay and take a look at the community and meet us and see if this is something you'd consider? I said, I'd love to, Jamie. Where's Lindsay? So he gave me some directions. He was pretty savvy because the weekend he invited me up was fair weekend. So the community was a buzz. He drove me up Bond Street and pointed out Ted Hill's home and John Walden's home and his home. And I thought, wow, these guys are doing pretty well here. And there's a lot going on. It was the best move I ever made. You know, someone who once said to me, when does a place become your home? And I said, I think a community becomes your home, and in all being quite sincere, when you have to decide where you're going to be buried when you die. So this is my home. I don't plan on getting buried sooner than I need to, but this is my home, all right? So I took over, worked at the firm. I was appointed counsel to Wilson & Wilson Limited. The firm, the corporation did really well. Mr. Wilson died, and in his will, he appointed three executors. He appointed Jamie McQuarrie, his longtime legal counsel. He appointed Doreen Bruce, who worked in the newspaper with him, and he appointed Tom McConomy, who also worked in the newspaper with him. He gave them each a home, and the fascinating thing is he appointed them as his directors to operate his corporation. What people really didn't know that's in the fine print here is because the will created effectively a charitable trust. Charitable trusts can't operate businesses for very long. And Mr. Wilson indicated that if and when they were forced to sell the businesses, the three executors were entitled to purchase a third interest in it for $60,000 each. And they could pay that interest free at a rate of $20,000 a year. And at the time of Mr. Wilson's death, the asset was worth $3 million. So what did the executors do? They said, that's not what we think he intended. They could have invested $60,000 that day and received $1 million return. And instead what they did was they took on some litigation, paid some lawyers, and ended up selling their interest for the $60,000 and permitting the trust to continue. And so what happens with the trust now, at one point the estate used to invest its, we generated income, obviously, through the businesses. The income through the business was set aside into the trust fund that, at that point, the Parks Board would make requests of the estate and say, here's where we want to spend it. The will was specific. The monies were never to be used to replace what the community should be expected to spend on parks. And it's parks-related. The language is clear when the executors make that determination. This has to be special expenditures, something that a community of this size would not otherwise be able to attain. And so after the businesses had to be wound up, they were then sold. The return on the sale of each separately was about $6 million. Those funds have remained invested on behalf of the estate. They generate around $400,000 or $500,000 a year, which in turn is used to approve and finance different projects. So what are some of those projects? The one that's most noticeable is Wilson Fields, which was acquired over time. That parcel, another great story about the people of Lindsay, a local businessman decided that should become a park. And at the time, the estate had no inkling that it was going up for sale. So he purchased the option to purchase those lands at a very discounted rate, and then in turn advised the estate who took it over. I think that was the gem that took a long time to put in place, and I know that local service clubs are also continuing to assist to do work out there. The other area that was of essential importance to Mr. Wilson and has continued is the development of the waterfront. You'll see now as you go across Wellington Street Bridge the work that's now being done on the garden beds. Those two projects between the current calendar year and next year are going to spend about $700,000 and put that park back to the state it used to be in. Over time and attrition and the amalgamation of the community, there haven't been enough dollars to go around, so some real efforts are being made. Some of the other history, the contractual history here that's interesting is an estate can't hold land. a beneficial estate can't hold land. So when the estate bought land, it had to go in the name of the town of Lindsay or the city of Kawartha Lakes more recently. But the concern became, well, what happens after we've purchased this land if a change in municipal government says we don't want it, we need the dough, let's sell it? The estate can't ask for the money back. So an agreement was worked out with the politicians at the time that there would be a return on the investment over 10 years. And after 10 years, if the municipality decided it was time to get rid of the asset, the land, then at that point they could do so without repaying the funds to the estate. The estate has always worked closely, and I want to say in almost all instances, without any hiccups between where the municipality wants to spend the money or where the estate thinks a project is warranted. There have been some interesting developments with the estate. I remember specifically the creation of Rivera Park. And at that point, I was in the little office over on Lindsay Street with Macquarie Hill. And one of the issues became putting a unique piece of sculpture in that park. And we had an artist come in with a cardboard model of, you may not even recognize it as a flower, but it's about a 30-foot iron flower. The neat thing about it is the petals open during windstorms. So I have to think that bloody thing was going crazy yesterday, because those winds last night would open and close that thing several times. The other was the commissioning of Skylark, which was a commuter boat that docked down under the bridge, again on Wellington Street, and routinely made runs out into Sturgeon Lake. Over time, there were dinners that were put on. There were events that would see it go to the south on Scugog. That was always a little trying because they had to lower the ballast to get it under the bridge. That boat was subsequently sold because of the drain on estate funds going to the boat as compared to financing the parks. There have been several misconceptions about the estate, that the estate can finance other worthy projects, but they're not tied to parks. We have, from time to time, I believe, thought outside the box. One was the creation of the palliative park, which is attached to the Ross Memorial Hospital. That park was done so that palliative patients would have something that they could go through, that they could look at, rather than looking at the roof of the hospital from the third floor. So the estate, in my view, has been an interesting project. It will continue, I suspect, with the involvement of local individuals. The provisions of the will were that when Jamie Macquarie died, Tom McConomy died, and at that point Doreen Bruce MacArthur was the sole survivor, that upon her death, the then Victorian Gray was to take over operation of the estate. The concern became once, at that point, it had gone from Victoria Gray to Scotia in the transition. The concern was we're not going to have anybody local that has their finger on what the community needs and will continue to deal with projects that are worthy and not simply rubber stamp requests that come across the table. And that's when steps were taken to appoint new members, new executors. Myself and Bob Puffer was the other executor appointed, and we still kept Scotia at the table. With Bob's passing and my appointment, we're going to have to go down that road again. And I'm happy to say that I think we've got some people that are actually in this room that are going to find themselves wearing one of those hats. So the history of the estate, the estate's acquisitions account for over 50% of the designated parkland in Lindsay. The investments from the estate are restricted to Lindsay. That was an agreement reached when amalgamation occurred, so that the desire of Mr. Wilson to continue to enhance and improve the park system in this community is not literally watered down outside. I don't know what more to say about the estate. It's been an amazing client to have the ability to respond to requests from this local community about something so wonderful as enhancing parks or recreational facilities is a once-in-a-lifetime dream for a lawyer. Most times we're dealing with things that aren't all that wonderfully pleasant. So this was really a feel-good appointment, and I owe it all to the fact that I answered a phone call from some guy named Jamie. So I'd be glad to answer.